For April the 19th, 2024, we talk about Content Warning, the Slay the Spire board game, the Fallout TV show, and much more. Welcome to Level 496. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back after a little break, I was in Milwaukee and then taking the week after Milwaukee off just in case I got sick. And also because it had been a while. Turns out I didn't get sick. Gary got sick. So, Yahtzee.
I'm not sick here.
Do you guys draw straws or how does that work?
No, I think the difference might be that he flew.
He kissed everyone who visited the booth on the mouth, and in retrospect, it was a real mistake.
It was very unwelcome in most of the cases. No. So we're back, and I'm excited to be back. At the top here, I want to headline something. So there is a charity stream being done starting, I believe, the night that this episode airs on Friday there. Or no, sorry, the night after this episode goes live. So from April the 20th through the 28th, Jala and a bunch of people from her community, which has big overlap with our community, are streaming to raise money for a charity called SAVE, the Suicide Awareness Voices of Education. This is being done specifically in memory of a community member, Chris. You might know him as Vertigo to Hell, tragically passed this past year. And this seems like a good thing to do. So yeah. There's a schedule of events up, at least now I see, from the 20th through to the 28th there. So check in the episode description for links to it, and also take a look at Jala's social media presence. I will retweet things as well as it goes, and dig deep if you can to help further the cause of suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There we go. I wanted to make sure I did that because I did not want to risk forgetting it. Not like I would, but you want to make sure. So
I intend to say some really wild shit during this episode. So yeah, I expect you to kind of be disoriented at the end.
It'll get us all off track. Just so spinning me around.
Episode.
Yeah. So, that is an unusual start. So I will just jump in. I pretty much said all of mine, really. We did the, here's the thing. Are you all aware of my snake problems?
No.
Go on.
Is this euphemism snake? No, or is this real snake?
No, my snake problems. You know, my snake problems. The snakes in my house.
Oh, no.
This happened once before. My brother, or no, so like 2 years ago, I was just, looking, saw that there was a snake in the house because the cats were like looking at it. So like I do anytime, I see a reptile in the house. This happened all the time down in Cincinnati with those little geckos, those little, Jesus mm-hmm. lizards or whatever they are, the Lazarus mm-hmm. lizards, went and got the tongs, threw it out, and then it kept getting back in. So I put it in a bag and then drove it across town and let it out, to disorient it. Right. You know, there's plenty of grass around here, little garter snake. You're good. All right. Just this past Saturday, I was on the phone with my brother and I said, "Hey, wait, Chris, the cats are looking at something. I'll call you back. I need to get the tongs. A snake's in the house." So I got that snake. And then over the course of the next day and then into the next morning, I took out three more snakes.
Oh my God.
I could tell they were different because.
Are you sure? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I could tell they were different because they were all different sizes. They went from little itty bitty was the first one up to one that must have been about a foot long just sitting in the middle of my hallway.
Holy Sounds shit. Like you need a pet mongoose now.
Well, the cats are fucking useless.
Oh, yeah. Cats are terrified of snakes.
So nothing has changed.
What were you going
to
say, so Moxie?
Did you use a snake bag to get rid of the snake?
No, the 1-2 years ago, I put it into a gallon baggie, drove across. Oh, okay. You just drove across town. It wasn't in there long enough to be suffocated.
What is a snake bag?
Yeah, what is a snake bag, Moxie?
So, like, regular, like, drawstring bags, the snakes will just noodle their way out of. So there's, like, special bags that are made to close real tight so that snakes don't escape.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a drawstring bag, but it's got a sign that says, please do not exit.
Snake. Emphasis on please. Yeah, so in snake, so it's all S's. Yeah.
It's also got like a no step on, snake thing. Yeah. But like in this case, it's not a political statement. It would just be kind of, you know, a dick move.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so the next day I was going around the perimeter of my house looking for ways they might have been getting in because there's something, right? I'm going to put this in the Slack, content warning. If you don't like snakes, look what I found at my back door. Resting at my back door.
Awesome. It's one of those, things from Bloodborne.
Yeah. All the snakes, it was kind of
things from How My Life Ends.
All those little garter snakes, because it was mid morning. So it wasn't necessarily the warmest out. They're just balled up in a little bundle. Right next to my back door, next to, if you look at the block that's over to the left of them, this little hole that apparently was, you know, knocked loose out of one of the bricks. I could see there was a little passage down there. So that was how they were getting in. It was through my slab foundation into my vents. So I went and got some of that expanding foam stuff, you know, for like insulation barrier kind of things. Filled it up. No more snakes.
Yeah, but snakes in your vents is a horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, my family was like, Cole, you're incapable of so much. How can you just pick up a snake? Like, how can this be nothing to you? It's like, well, you know, there's garter snakes. They can't really hurt you. They stink.
I do like the fact that you use tongs. Like, I don't know why, but just the aesthetics of that really pleases me. Like, just like it's a very large noodle.
Yeah. You just take it out. Its little tongue goes out, you know, and you just, I took him out and I just hurled him across the street and they kept coming back. So.
It had to have been like
a neighbor's yard.
Yeah. It had to have been like, you know, a nest that had eggs or, you know, something. I don't know how
they were all different sizes. So if that was the case, those was multiple generations of snake. Garter snake families don't stay together based on my reading. So I think this might have just been some kind of like mutual snake aid network.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, just bodying up and sharing warmth. So
you were the snakes Area 51 for that, you know, brief summer where everyone was going to storm Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
You were that for snakes.
Yeah.
What snake secrets are you hiding?
It was weird how they were Naruto running, despite the fact they had no arms or legs. Yeah.
They just have to shout very loudly, I'm Naruto running.
Yeah. So that's my story. Also, it was lovely meeting people. If you came out to Milwaukee, I really enjoyed meeting you, seeing you there. Hopefully there will be more in the future. I've taken up enough time with my snake stories. Let's see. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I did an eclipse.
You did. I did an eclipse as well.
Yeah. I feel like
you're the ones who are responsible.
Yes.
It was me.
I told the sun enough.
Sorry about
get behind the moon and it went and hit.
Sorry about all those eclipses. Oh gosh.
But we drove out to be in the totality, stay with some friends, and went to I'm gonna forget, it's like Connor's Prairie or something. Like, it was a park.
Oh, in Indianapolis?
Yeah. Oh, maybe I got the name right.
That was one of my favorite things as a kid.
Does it have a giant hot air balloon that goes up and down?
It did not when I was there.
Okay, so there's like a children's museum attached to like a big outdoor park area, and there's like a historical settler house and all this other stuff, you know, animals, petting zoo kind of deal. But the like outdoor portion of the children's museum has a honest to God balloon. I don't know if it's hot air, you know, and it's like on a cable and it just goes up and down, but it's got a big like visitor, gondola under it and you can, get on and take it up. And I think they said it goes up about as high as an 8-story building.
Hmm.
300 some odd feet, but like high enough that you can see Indianapolis over the horizon. And literally over the horizon, like you can see the tops of the buildings, can't see the bottoms of them. and that was just a really cool experience. So doing lots of sky themed things. And I asked the attendant, cause she's like, you know, any questions, I have to answer anything. I was like, do you ever get any flat earthers that go up in this? And she's like, I've had one or two.
Okay.
And they go up and they see how flat it is below them and they feel very validated and then they go back down and on with their lives.
Oh, just raise me up over that hill over there. You know, the many hills of Indiana.
Like you can literally see the curvature of the earth. Like, what are we doing here? But yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun. And then the eclipse itself was awesome, especially seen from totality where, you know, at 1%, you still can't look at it without glasses. And then bam, you know, when it's all the way behind, it's just a really cool, you know, I thought I'd seen enough album covers to have it done justice, but no, it outpaced all of them.
Every picture just focuses on the corona around the sun. What it doesn't highlight, and the thing that I found most crazy about it, was like the entire horizon around you is still kind of lit up. So it's like this weird reverse, I don't know, like it's a sunset from all directions almost, as opposed to just one.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you are very much just in a shadow, which apparently I learned that the shadow moves across the earth at like 2000 miles an hour or something.
Yeah.
And you can charter a jet to like fly along that path to extend the amount of time you were in the total eclipse.
That would have to be one of the Concords, like way back when.
Yeah. But you know, even then they can't keep up for long stretches. So
I hope not.
Very cool. Yes. Humans weren't meant to travel that fast.
Nice. What do the kids think about the eclipse?
Their minds were blown.
Okay.
Yeah. They were very exuberant and emphatic that like this was so cool. Now then again, there was also like a large slide that you would go down in an inner tube, and they had much the same reaction to that.
Oh yeah. I mean,
they seemed properly awestruck.
To really juice them about it, you should say like, all right, you know, we're not guaranteed that the sun's going to come back, so you really need to just
pray it.
You know, I really need you to pay attention to this.
It's like Santa Claus. If you haven't done your chores enough.
Wait, I'm sorry. That would be child abuse.
Also you heard it here. Santa Claus is child abuse. That's what I took away. So the one thing that was notably absent that the kids were excited for and didn't get was apparently like squirrels are supposed to freak out.
Okay.
When they're in the eclipse. Cause like, hey, suddenly night.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we're in like a big, essentially a concert venue. Like an outdoor concert venue.
So there's not a lot of squirrels around.
Not a lot of squirrels hanging out. So we did not get any freaked out squirrels. And that was disappointing to the kiddos. But otherwise, they were quite entertained.
I always heard that the birds got quiet, and for me they did for a little bit. And then and then they started chirping again.
It's just no one's got time for this.
Yeah.
Okay, I was somewhat pissed that you made me think sound wise. People who had seen the last one 7 years ago talked about the like just the hush, like everyone gets awestruck.
Yeah,
And you know everything's kind of darkened, and so yeah, there's just this like uber hush that goes over everything. And I mentioned we're at a concert venue, so they have a stage and speakers. Someone started playing music during the totality.
What music?
They started playing Walking on Sunshine.
Oh God, no.
Assholes.
I had a small Bluetooth speaker with me out on the driveway. And I very gently, just for myself, had it play Claire de Lune. And then after a certain point, I just, you know, slowly faded it down and appreciated it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, it's nothing sacred. Classy.
Yeah, tasteful.
Yeah.
So
Walking on Sunshine, that's just crass.
Inaccurate. By definition, inaccurate.
I feel like the layup is Black Hole Sun, but glad nobody played that.
Nice.
But yeah, it was a good week.
Cool. Moxie, how about you?
Honestly, mine is much the same. You know, went home for the eclipse, and yeah, it was very epic. The little weird circle logo from Dark Souls will never look the same.
the real one's less drippy than the Dark Souls 3 one. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Whereabouts, if it doesn't break OPSEC, did you watch from?
Oh, from Mansfield.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Any particular venue, or was it just on your parents' property?
Just my parents.
Gotcha. Okay.
And what and was then, the address?
you know. And then we had over the weekend. So what I think I might have mentioned before, one of my friends down here does once a month does a like B-rated movie night.
Okay.
Hmm.
And so we watched a episode of Flash Gordon, which is always you know, appropriately corny, and then watched this time it was Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Mm.
Which, nice. You know, old Ed Wood thing, very entertaining, you know, some funny, continuity errors,
Oh yeah, classic.
You know, I don't know if you've seen it, but, Bela Lugosi is technically in it.
Yeah, then they replaced him. There's a very good movie about that includes the story of the making of Plan 9 Outer Space.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's it's a Tim Burton movie from 1994 called Ed Wood. That goes into a bunch of details. Like it's not just Plan 9, but that's like a big part of it, kind of telling the story about his friendship with Bela Lugosi, and then just he recast him with a tall friend who was covering his face with a cape most of the time.
Well, the funny thing is it's actually at least two people, which you can tell because they have noticeably different haircuts.
Yeah. But yeah, Ed Wood is great, even though I'm not that huge of a Tim Burton fan post, you know, like basically after that. And also it stars Johnny Depp, who, you know. It is a fun movie about a bunch of weirdos who find each other and make terrible art. Yeah.
Kind of like us.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, wait a minute.
You guys make art?
Oh, you know. So, cool. Ben, round us out.
Oh, not too much. Small event that, for the last two eclipses, I've been in the opposite location.
Oh no.
Where I was living in Austin when the one happened that came across the West Coast, and I'm living on the West Coast now when the one that went through Texas. So.
Shit.
Ben, you've got 40 years to figure your shit out, all right?
Well, so one of my friends, went to Texas, went to Dallas to see it, and then immediately afterwards said, I'm going to go to Spain in 2 years to see the next one. Do you all want to come or what?
Hmm.
So apparently there's like shortcuts to it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's my understanding is there's pretty often one somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is irritating. I was wondering about that. I was trying to place where you would have been in 2017. But yeah, you would have been in Austin. So dang.
Oh, well. And then. Yeah, anyway. But outside of missing that, though, I went to Portland for a baby shower, which was fun. And I went on a hike over the weekend last weekend since it was beautiful out. So, yeah.
Sweet.
Mostly just chilling, waiting for it to get warmer and warmer. So.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that, too, at some point. We'll see.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. It was 85 degrees near me today.
Yeah, it was quite warm out right now.
We had our 2 weeks outside,
of nice to be outside, and now it's time for sucks to be outside.
I thought we could at least get through April. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I mean, I am presuming it was probably hotter here than where you guys are, just because of, you know,
latitude. Yeah.
But I don't actually go outside if I can help it. So.
Right.
It's good policy.
Yeah. Well, I think we should talk about games and stuff. And to do that, we should do the regular kind of show. What with the multi, the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Let's see, who has something new?
I have something new.
Okay, Ben, go.
First. So I'm not going to start with the new thing, though. I'm going to start with the thing we've already talked about.
Bait and switch.
The bait and switch one is I played Helldivers 2 for the first time, finally.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Hey!
It was fun.
The end.
I'll probably play it later, but...
Did you blow yourself up?
Probably. I think somebody dropped, like, something on the structure that I was on and killed me, so that sure.
Yeah, close enough.
I played with friends from work, so that was nice. It's a fun bonding experience. The people I played with were like way into the game, so they were like level like 36 or something like that. So I have
were
a feeling
playing it.
Kind of.
Like, that's concerning.
They were role-playing it as if they were in Starship Troopers and were aware of what Starship Troopers was.
Gotcha.
But not overly into it. But it was a good time. Enjoyed it. I will probably look for opportunities to do that again in the future. I don't know if I'm going to do it too much on my own, though, or like solo queuing or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Moving on from that, I'll get to the actual new game. The new game that I've been playing is I played Content Warning.
Oh, shit. I want to check this out. This is the new Lethal Company.
Yeah, and this okay. So I heard about this because it was for free on April Fool's Day on Steam, and so one of my friends pinged me about it and said to download it. And then the next night, I played with through my friends from Cincinnati, and then So basically, the premise of this game is this is a game that would be perfect for a charity stream that we do or any sort of stream where we're doing multiplayer. But the premise of this is you're trying to go viral on a like SpookTube, I think, which is their equivalent of spooky YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you're doing this is kind of like a Phasmophobia style loop, except instead of trying to identify a ghost, you're trying to film a ghost and possibly film the ghost killing your friends and posting it on social media. It has a very surreal vibe where your main base is like in the clouds and it's like very almost like Sesame Street kind of vibes to it.
No.
It's very cartooned. And you're on a house that's like on this kind of like Mario-esque like floating in the clouds like stage. And there is a diving bell in the corner of the area that you can exit your house and go into. And then once everybody's in that, you can press a switch and it descends. And then you go out into this like Escher looking black and white, like surrealist like area that has monsters in it, which is like very much the opposite of the home base vibe. It's like cartoon scary kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like Silent Hill looking stuff crossed with that indie horror game that came out a couple years ago, Moon Dawn, which had like the kind of monochromatic pencil sketch kind of look, even though it was a 3D game.
Yeah, is that the same one? The one that was like the ink based one or whatever that you played on stream that was like old timey.
Yeah, that must have been the same one. Yeah, they're just a similar thing. Just like everything looks like crosshatched pencil sketches.
Yeah. That's what makes me think. Is it the Magic Circle?
Yeah, Magic Circle has a little bit of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you have inventory items that you can purchase and take with you on these like runs. You always get a camera for free, but the camera has a limited amount of recording time, maybe like a minute or 30 seconds, somewhere in that ballpark. And so one person's filming everyone else, but you all kind of go as a group. It is very often that somebody will die, especially because they don't really communicate how to deal with all of these like monsters, but all of the monsters kind of have like weaknesses of some kind. And you can either play around with to try and find it, or you can look on like there's a wiki page that like will tell you like what they are. And it can be something as simple as like shining a light on it. It can be something like making a lot of noise. The game has really good in-game audio that you can use. It's a very like creative and playful game where it's like even like your appearance you can customize, and the appearance of your face is you literally type out three characters. You have a 3-character limit, and that's what your face is.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically using a lot of like text type emojis, you know, like colon, you know, close parentheses or whatever for a smiley face. You can do that and just rotate it in any order.
Well, we used to call those emoticons. D. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the cap off is if you survive, or at least one of you survives and takes the camera back up back to your home base, you upload the footage to SpookTube, and then you can watch the video together. And then there's real time comments by like fake people on the internet. And then it gives you basically a score based on like how many people start following you based off of your spooky video.
Okay.
And so the idea is you want to try and make it as like gory or as like viral as possible, whatever that means. And kind of like Lethal Company, you have like 3 days to hit a certain score, and that score will increase over time. So there's like a constant upping of the ante.
So yeah, this is like Pokemon Snap, Lethal Company, like Payday 2 kind of thing. Like, I say Payday 2 because is there any incentive for everybody to get back alive?
Not really.
Sounds like explicitly not.
Yeah.
It feels similar to like Phasmophobia, but just like inverse motivations where it's like you don't care what the ghost is. You want to get killed by the ghost, in fact.
Are you graded as a group? Or is it whoever caught and uploaded? Okay, cool.
Yeah. There's not a single scoring. You get money as a group and everything like that, and then you decide like what you want to buy. There's like higher price items, like a taser, I think. But then there's just like fun, somewhat cheaper items that you can buy maybe one or two of at a time, which is like a boom mic or a clapper that will like increase the quality of the video.
I see one character bopping another character on the head with a boom mic. I love that.
Yeah. And then what's great is the cheapest price item is a party popper that costs $5. And so whatever money you have left, you're buying a bunch of party poppers that everyone can use.
Do these serve any purpose, or?
You can videotape one or two of your members doing party poppers with somebody who's like in the process of dying, and that's kind of funny.
Just stunt on them.
Yeah. Excellent.
And there's like maybe three different maps that you can go into, and it has like a good variety of enemies. I'm sure like you eventually like memorize all of them, similar to like Lethal Company or Phasmophobia. Mm-hmm. But it feels like a pretty good variety up front. A lot of surprise ways to die, it feels like, at least on your first few runs. And then a cool part about this is when you have the video at the end of it, it gives you an option to download it to your computer. So you can literally just watch the like 30 or 60 seconds like later if you want to. And it's like, it's pretty enjoyable, like the end product. Like, it's pretty consistently funny what you get. And there's a lot of cool tricks the person operating the camera can do, where it's like they can do selfie mode. Seeing your character run away while someone's dying in the background is pretty choice. And then you can do like zooms and stuff like that. So, So there's like a lot of room for expert play. So anyway, it's a pretty fun experience. I think we played for maybe 1 or 2 hours. And then, like, specifically, like, said, all right, let's take a break. And let's come back to it maybe, you know, like, a month later or a couple weeks later. Because it does feel like you could probably burn out on it pretty quickly if you played it for a long time.
Is this early access?
I'm not sure about that.
It's not early access. I was going to ask how stable it felt.
It was completely fine. We ran into no bugs and, like, no crashes or anything like that. So, and again, it was free when it came out on April 1st, so there's like no downside. So.
And it's $8 if you're gonna buy it. Like, it's not a not a huge ask. Yeah,
not prohibitively expensive. So it seems like a pretty sweet ploy on their part, where it's like, since it's a 4-player game and benefits from that, like a bunch of people, random people getting it for free on April 1st probably boosted them a whole bunch. I do think that they had like maybe some crashing bugs like on April 1st from it just being like such a huge uptick in traffic playing the game, but I think that mellowed out pretty quickly because we played it I think the next day and didn't have any issues. So good game. Definitely suggest we play it whenever we do the next charity stream. So
Really, really fun to me.
Yeah.
Is that all you got?
That's all I got.
All right. Let's see who else has something new.
I have a new game.
Okay, Dennis, go.
But it's a board game.
Mm-hmm.
But that board game is based on a video game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about the Slay the Spire board game.
Oh.
Which arrived on my doorstep.
So not the Slay the Spire card game?
The Slay the Spire card game board game?
And this isn't Slay the Spire 2.
It is not. don't spoil the news. No, this is not Slay the Spire 2, but I got it on the same day that I found out about Slay the Spire 2.
No, so, wait, I meant 2, like T-O-O.
Slay the... Never mind. No, there's... You... no, so I had the Slay the Spire-iest day ever.
Right.
But this was kickstarted a while back, and is basically a board game version of the roguelite deck builder that I love so much. And it's, you know, it's it did the Kickstarter thing where like, okay, I'm really excited, and now I'll wait for 2.5-3 years. but it arrived, and folks, it is really freaking good. Basically we took we have one of those like play train tables downstairs, and we ripped all the trains off of it, turned the main like board of the table upside down, and made a makeshift game table that we set up Slay the Spire on. Mm-hmm. And it has not come down since. Okay. Over the course of about a week. And I've been playing it with my 9 and 7-year-old Luke and Milo.
Okay.
And it is a real good time. I've been surprised at how faithful to the video game experience, it is. Like it perfectly captures the vibes of playing Slay the Spire.
Despite the fact that it is multiplayer and involves dice rolling.
Correct. Dice rolling is more of a substitute for the fact that there was randomness.
Okay.
in the game outside of card draws, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, some enemy attack patterns were random, and so now, you know, you roll the die at the beginning of each turn to determine what the enemies do. Mm-hmm. And then some of your relics, some of the relics have been kind of changed to be dependent on the die roll results. It actually is a nice little wrinkle, but like I said, vibes wise, it is spot on.
Mm-hmm.
The card, like all the numbers are smaller. They've all been crunched down. And so your typical strike, like the basic card for attacking, does 1 damage instead of 6. And other elements have been simplified, like vulnerable, which in the video game has you doing 1.5 damage or 1.5x damage. Here it just doubles the damage.
Yeah, simplifying the arithmetic. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of accommodations to that. But at least so far, it's felt, you know, very very well balanced. Probably the greater miracle is the other thing you mentioned, which is that it is a multiplayer game. At least possible to play multiplayer. You can certainly do it solo, and there's some special cards and rules for that. But the way the multiplayer works is effectively every room that you go into for combat starts 3 concurrent combats. So each player gets a card for a monster and their associated summons. Just like you would get, you know, a card for, or you would get a fight in the game. But you have 3 of those going on simultaneously. Making it interesting though, is some of the monster attacks hit all of your players. And you can, you know, place attacks anywhere that you went, anywhere that you want on any monster across the 3, in my case, 3 combats.
Okay, so it's not just 4 different people having their own individual battles that occasionally right. might overlap.
Exactly. It is very much like, all right, you know, each person is under a unique, distinct threat, mm-hmm. but we need to figure out how to deal with this turn's incoming damage and deal with kind of the macro fight. You know, with damage we anticipate coming in future turns, et cetera, collectively. And man, like, you know, Slay the Spire is a game that you can think really, really deeply about and go war game turn after turn thinking ahead, right? Now multiply that by 3 or up to 4 players, you know, if we ever start that 4th player. And it is just like mind-boggling really quickly.
No.
That, you know, you have to think about, okay, well, you know, my deck doesn't generate much block, so I need you guys to help me. Can you send some block my way? In return, I will take out this one monster that's attacking you. And that means, you know, you don't have to worry about block as much. And, basically in Slay the Spire, there's a bunch of like cool concepts and builds that you can kind of go towards, that as the game gets harder, stop being viable just because they have a deficiency in some area that when it's just you is going to get you killed. Like, oh, this deck is really fun, but it dies to this enemy. Mm-hmm. And at some point you're going to see that enemy. In the board game, because you're building collectively, each building your own deck, you can do those fun builds and count on your friends to kind of cover the deficiencies for you.
Right.
And so the possibility space for the crazy fun stuff you can do feels much, much wider than it does even in the game. So compound, you know, the fact that you have three combats going on simultaneously that everyone can impact, and the fact that at the macro level deck building, you can kind of specialize in a way that you're not able to in the main game. And this is deep gameplay.
Do those specializations, you know, I assume you like have a different starter deck based on like a class you choose, but like, mm-hmm. basically what I want to ask is it still possible to achieve synergies, and does having multiple people enable cross-party synergies in any way?
Yeah, definitely. Especially when it comes to those status effects. So weak and vulnerable are kind of the two main ones.
Mm-hmm.
Vulnerable being inflicting, you know, double damage on the next hit, and then the vulnerable is removed. And then weak is that, you know, whenever something does attack damage, it does one less damage. Which, remember, a basic attack is one damage.
So right.
It is, you know, that is more significant than it sounds. And then you discard a weak token. But if they have, you know, multiple weak tokens, you know, they'll have multiple of their attacks deal one less damage. And so you have lots of cards that, you know, might inflict one of those effects that then, you know, other people can follow up on. So, hey, I'll put all my weak on your row of characters so that you're freed up to then put vulnerable on the third person's row of characters so that they can, you know, absolutely clobber their enemies this turn. That kind of set and spiking.
This sounds difficult to play with children. Not to discount like how good your kids are at playing it, but I imagine this would all be a little bit easier to achieve if everybody was super familiar with the game, or approaching as familiar as you are.
Yeah. Has their frontal lobe fully developed?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not here to nag your kids.
they've been surprisingly competent. Now, I will say we are playing on the base difficulty level, mm-hmm. right? So in Slay the Spire, there are ascensions that every time you win, you kind of go up in difficulty in very interesting ways. And we're playing, you know, just with the beginning level of difficulty. But they've been very competent, and they love playing Slay the Spire on my phone. And you know, we'll do that.
Okay.
So they're familiar with all of the concepts going on. And I think that is probably the biggest barrier I would worry about is, like, I think a kid that's not familiar with the game, it's going to take a long on ramp to get them up to speed with everything mm-hmm. that's going on. With my kids, it was, you know, that on ramp was given to them in the form of a video game, which they have infinite attention for.
Right.
Not so much anything else in life, but, you know, if it's on a screen, man, they will engage with that for hours. And so they kind of came in knowing how everything works. Combine that with the fact that there is no turn order. So, you know, as you play cards, you kind of do that in any order you want. So I could take half my turn, alley-oop it over to someone else who takes half their turn, and you just, you know, pass back and forth on a card-by-card basis. So everything happens very much by discussion. Generally, even then, they have a pretty good handle on what to do. I don't feel like it's me playing by myself and just having them execute the steps, but that makes it a lot easier, kind of takes the pressure off, because we can discuss it in committee, as it were.
Yeah.
I got a question. Yeah. Is operating the enemy AI like similar to like Gloomhaven, where it's like super tedious, or is it pretty streamlined?
No, it's very streamlined. So there's a couple different ways that the enemy cards can be set up. One is just like, this is what they do every turn. And there's one thing that they're going to do every turn. And it might be something like, you know, attack for one and gain a strength. And so next turn they would attack for two and gain a strength and, you know, so on and so forth. The next thing is randomized behaviors. So there's basically three possible things they might do or two possible things they might do. And at the beginning of every turn of combat, you roll a die. And then you know for that turn that's what they're going to do, but it's randomized. The other thing is just check down based. So it's there are those three possible things they might do, but you know they're going to do the first thing on the first turn, the second thing on the second turn, and the third thing on the third turn, and then repeat. And bosses in particular usually have that pattern where they have, you know, maybe four different steps they go through. It's been very easy to manage, and yeah, it feels nothing like the Gloomhaven level of, like, there's never been a debate about what it means that an enemy is going to do something. So that's good. Funny enough, the biggest arguments or the most distress my kids have had playing is when we've won a combat. So you get to that last turn, you know, and you draw your cards and you're like, yep, we killed everyone but one single enemy that's left. And we know we this is in the bag. I could kill it myself. You guys each have a way you could kill it. We're good here. Now, me playing a board game, that's the point where I would throw in the cards, right? Okay, start pulling rewards, start going to the next combat. They are so excited to be like, I want to be the one that lands the killing blow. I want to do this. I want to do that. And and then, well, no, I was going to do this and that. And, you know,
introduce those kids to League of Legends.
Yeah. thanks, but I don't want to hate my children. Yeah, it's like, you know, I get it. You've invested time and effort in building your deck that does these cool things. You want them to do the cool thing. It helps that, Luke's playing the defect, which is focused on like these lightning orbs that strike at the end of his turn. And is lucked into getting some cards that like really power him up. So once his deck is set up, he does 15 damage a turn without playing any additional cards. and then Milo's got his silent deck that deals a bunch of poison damage and weakens enemies. I played the Ironclad and just have a big, you know, big stick hit hard deck. And mine is probably the biggest example of, you know, I took these big attack cards that use all my mana. And probably could not have that function if it was just me. But Luke and Milo, since Luke, once he's set up, all his damage is solved, he can focus on blocking for other people. And then Milo has more of like a debuffing, kind of build. So, you know, I get a lot of help from them on that front as I bash things with my stick. literally bash it. That's one of the cards. It is literally like, it's been on this table since we set it up, has not come down. We are at the beginning of Act 3. So, you know, be warned, it says 90 minutes per run on the box, and that is a lie. we're probably on like hour 5 or 6 of our first game.
I feel like they need like a graph of, you know, age of participants versus time of run.
Yeah, I would appreciate that for sure. but yeah, absolutely loving it. The other good thing about playing with my kids, the format of the game relies on the cards being sleeved, because when you upgrade a card, you like turn it around in the sleeve and the backside has the upgraded version.
Okay.
But that means I had to sleeve, you know, probably 300 cards to start playing.
Provide the sleeves?
It does provide the sleeves, and okay, they are Slay the Spire theme, so cool. Nice sleeves. And having two kids who thought it was the coolest thing ever to sleeve cards was a nice little cheat code. Be like, yeah, this is fun, isn't it? let's keep doing this. So
Did the Tom Sawyer.
I Tom Sawyered them hard, yeah.
You really don't want to paint those cards white. You paid a lot of money to get them.
You know, in retrospect, that was a bad idea. It's really, really fun. And I see it, you know, especially given that we're just on our first run, and the format of it is so different run to run. I foresee it being a fixture in our downstairs for a long time.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what? Yeah, that's the Slay the Spire board game.
And I got to say, seeing this art on cards, I think it looks more at home there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Can you fight the heart in the game?
There is an Act 4. And there are, like I said, there are ascension tiers, there are unlocks. Like, it very much leaned into the roguelite elements where, you know, they give you plenty of fun new stuff to unlock.
Do you unlock cards, like, progressively, like you do in the game?
You do, yeah.
Okay.
So every class, basically, when you win, they have a bunch of checkboxes, and you add a check for every act that you completed. And then, you know, when you fill up a row, you open those cards. So we'll see what's in them.
Yeah. Cool. Did you have anything else?
Yeah. I was bad about playing video games. I mean, no, I played a ton of video games, but it was video game. I played a ton of XCOM too.
Right. Yeah.
Had a super deep run. I felt like I was over the curve. I was in the clear. And then I screwed up the chosen base assault, which I know means nothing.
No, I remember you explaining it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But yeah, so you know, back to square one. But that's fine. I did watch the first episode of Fallout, and I don't know. Other people watching?
I'll talk about it later. Don't worry.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was gonna say it feels like something we can talk about.
Yeah.
But just the first episode, no spoilers, please.
Yes.
But it was good. Mm-hmm. I'll let you say more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I might as well, because I was on vacation and I didn't play a lot of games over it. It's weird. I didn't play games, but I did spend a lot of time doing my taxes. So, like, weird vacation you got there, Cole. I did watch all of Fallout. I watched like the first episode, then the next day I watched two episodes more, and then the last day I was like, well, I'm just gonna watch all of this. It's good. I like it quite a bit. I went in not expecting very much at all, you know, as you're generally good doing for like a, you know, video game adaptation kind of thing. But they seem to They seem to get it. Like, it feels Fallout enough for me. This is going to differ depending on what about Fallout you like, or which era of Fallout is more your thing. This feels a lot like Bethesda era Fallout. Not necessarily a bad thing, not a judgment call, but that is qualitatively different than, you know, Black Isle or Obsidian, right? Or sure, Interplay or Obsidian, right? So there is that standing in, but what I think is more important is that it's just like a really well put together show with engaging characters and a pretty tightly constructed mystery about what's going on here that is kind of, I don't know, like reeled out or, you know, let out at enough of a pace to really keep you curious about it. I mean, it was enough to like drive me, to binge it when I never really do that. But yeah, it's real good. Hesitant about recommending a program on Amazon, but if you happen to have that, you might as well see it. Also, it is weird how critical of capitalism it is, given the company that aired it and put up a lot of the money for it. So,
if criticizing capitalism is going to make you money, then capitalists are going to criticize capitalism.
That's the thing. Capitalism.
I am currently reading several things discussing.
Yeah,
exactly that point.
Yeah, capitalism is impossible to criticize because it will always encompass and envelop any criticism of it to reproductize it. So, you know, there is that bleakness there. But, you know, like there's a good deal of it that takes place pre-war, specifically regarding Walton Goggins' character, the ghoul. Kind of his pre-war life, and that is cool because you don't necessarily get an awful lot of that in the games, you know. There's like maybe that weird little Leave It to Beaver VR thing in one of the vaults in Fallout 3, kind of a standout mission from that. Here you kind of get to see about that. The three kind of main characters that you have in this are a vault dweller who is going out to find her dad, Who is really naive in encountering how brutal it is on the surface for the first time. You have a Brotherhood of Steel initiate who is who by misadventure winds his way into being a squire and kind of going out into the world. And then you have that ghoul who is acting as a bounty hunter going after an enclave scientist. Who defected and has something that will, you know, change the fate of the wasteland forever. This is in continuity, and it is like a sequel to like other Fallout stuff. So like a stuff that happens here may end up affecting what happens in the games. Also, this is the first time in a while that Fallout has returned to the West Coast. The Bethesda entries have been either, you know, it's been Boston, D.C., or West Virginia, always in the east. This returns to, you know, L.A. And the surroundings, which is cool to see.
Yeah, I didn't know that piece about it being in canon or, like, you know, in continuity.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Without spoilers, like, big stuff is answered and revealed about it. Not everybody's going to like that. But I don't know. I was pretty fine with it. I'm fine with the broader story being moved forward by a TV show and not a game. So yeah.
The one thing I heard, and, you know, I don't know, I haven't watched it yet, but that sound pretty questionable, is that they take a stance on who first dropped the bombs, which to me feels like not understanding Fallout.
I was not displeased with the answer for it. Enough is, again, spooled out that the lead up to it makes a good amount of sense to me. Obviously your mileage is going to vary on that. Sorry. I don't know of what you read. And this is getting into real dicey spoiler territory.
Yeah. So I'll have to see it. My gist thing is, like, that seems like that could very easily undermine the anti-war message.
It's very much not against. In fact, I would say it is the most anti-war that anything Fallout has been since New Vegas. You know, definitely more anti-war than Fallout 3 as well. I was actually pretty surprised to see it kind of return to that, as opposed to nuclear bombs are awesome, aren't they? Here's a gun that throws them like they're nothing.
So. Are there any scions?
Scions. I can't remember what a scion is.
Like, anyone with psychic powers?
Oh, anybody with psionics. Not that I remember, or not that was featured there.
That's my low-key hope for if they, like, make this a series, is that they take the authentic approach of not mentioning any of that until they're like three seasons in, and then all of a sudden there's someone with like the ability to just like predict the future or some shit.
Right. I don't want to, like, I'm comfortable saying that that's not there. I don't want to say what is and isn't here from the mythology. Because by process of elimination, that might make the kind of the central mystery of the season a little bit easier to discern.
That means I can still hope that the tunnel snakes are in it.
One thing that is definitely in it is video gamey stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And again, having only watched the first episode, I was very happy with, I guess it's references or whatever, but how many things that felt like they were out of the video game are in it. You know, there's the Pip-Boys that are strapped to everyone's wrist, and there are med kits, and, you know, you see someone, you know, inhaling jet and stuff like that. It's all represented, and I think you're allowed to do that because it is such a tongue-in-cheek tone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they handled that element of it really well. And kind of thinking about that specifically, and then also what the Mario movie did, I'm really liking this trend of, like, the video game media that seems to be working kind of embraces the fact that it's from a video game versus trying to, you know, play everything super serious or not have anything that feels like, okay, that was a, you know, that was a video game moment. I haven't watched The Last of Us yet, so I can't comment there. I imagine they maybe played things a little more serious.
But, yeah, they made it pretty strict-laced.
On that note, have you seen the voice actor announcement for the new Sonic?
Yes. Yeah. Keanu Reeves is going to be playing Shadow the Hedgehog, which
John Wick truly is
absurd. Yeah. Oh, just speaking of video gamey things, one of my favorite jokes in this. So the Brotherhood of Steel, you know, they're running around in this power armor. They have squires who are working with them, and the squire's sole job is just to carry around an absurdly large, like, golf bag full of all of the equipment. They worked in encumbrance into this, by having these, you know, heavily armed characters just have a dedicated person to help to carry the stuff for them very funny.
And like that bag seems to be engineered like 3 pounds, something like that.
But the guns are much heavier too. What were you saying, Dennis?
The bag seems engineered to be as unwieldy to carry as possible.
Yes, they're about as tall as the person carrying them.
Mm-hmm. Would it be spoiler to say like what era is this?
Oh, this is post. This is
post all of the things.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's too bad. I would have liked to see more of like the Fallout 76 era.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly their Brotherhood of Steel is really, really interesting.
Yeah. This is the Brotherhood of Steel that is all just zealot assholes.
Okay. Yeah. Not the drug abusing one.
No. Great performances. Walton Goggins is a national treasure. First and foremost, you only get like a little bit of him, but you got Kyle MacLachlan in there as kind of the MacGuffin, the dad. No, he's not the MacGuffin. It's very specifically a different person. He's the MacGuffin. But for the Vault Dweller, Kyle MacLachlan plays the dad who was kidnapped, who she's going after. So that was neat to see.
Is he the Liam Neeson? Is that the person who was in Fallout 3?
Yes. Yeah. I can't say anything about his character in relation to that without spoiling anything. God damn it.
I'll say it. I'm not scared. So at the end of the show, you bring a mutant buddy to go into a radiated area to save him, or the Vault Dweller does, and then the mutant refuses, saying, no, I think you reuniting with your dad is the better experience.
Oh God.
They don't have high intelligence. So, you know,
they don't. So I apologize for bringing a video game TV show instead of an actual game, but I knew it would come up. I knew it would come up at some point or another. So we're cool, I think. Any other stray questions or thoughts about it? It's a big recommendation for me. We're going to be covering it on Adaptation Decay somehow.
Yeah, that's a layup.
Appropriate name, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Let's see. Who do we have left? I believe it's just Moxie.
Yep. So I've got two things. One, a new game. This game called Ripout. They had a free weekend on Steam, and then I enjoyed it enough to actually purchase it. It's real cheap. Like, was $15 on sale. I think maybe like $20 regular. Currently in early access, but this is a roguelike first-person shooter where the plotline is that humanity gets to space and meets a alien species that, you know, just starts a war with them. And in order to fight back, humanity creates this like cell technology that basically allows them to like build mutant super soldiers. However, the technology starts infecting people and like, you know, just creating these uncontrollable monsters and somehow fusing with machinery. It's kind of unclear. Humanity then, you know, abandons Earth and, you know, jets off in these ships. But you know, somehow the monsters got on board. And so you wake up as one of the few super soldiers that, you know, didn't get infected or go crazy, and you're basically trying to track down what happens. So each run is you adventuring through this abandoned ship that's been taken over as you're following kind of the convoy trying to catch up with them.
Mm-hmm.
However, the big gameplay thing is your gun you have is what's called a pet gun. And so it's your gun is actually a little skittering creature with like, you know, a whole bunch of legs and a mouth and eyes and all that stuff. And so you can, there's various little weapon creatures around that you can send your gun out to go like run out, jump on and subdue, and then like send back to you, and they perch on your shoulder as like, oh, now you have a rocket launcher, or you know, now when you press your action button you get a teleport, things like that.
It kind of looks like the BioShock type hand where it's like magic in your left hand.
Right, exactly. And the only thing is that enemies can also get these items, so you can, you know, all of a sudden, find an enemy that has, like, shields or, you know, the aforementioned rocket launcher, things like that.
Okay.
You can, however, you can send your pet to either rip out those upgrades from the enemies, or just to like attack enemies. And you know, each mission you're in each room there's going to be a upgrade station that gives you, you know, you can select from one of three random upgrades. And so you can very much, if you want to build your character around gunplay, or build your character entirely around, you know, sicking your little gun monster on people. One of the interesting kind of, considerations as a player is you've got your pet gun and then a secondary pistol. And so while you're sicking your gun on something, you can only use your pistol. So you need to decide, like, in a given circumstance, is it more important to, you know, do whatever I want, you know, it is I'd have my gun doing, or to actually have a better weapon?
Can your pet get, like, incapacitated or, like, committed for a long amount of time doing something?
From what I've seen, it cannot get incapacitated. It takes a noticeable amount of time because it has to like run out to whatever enemy you sick down, you know, attack it for a couple seconds and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
However, the only time I've seen where it's taken, I'd say, a long time is, you know, occasionally the pathing will get a little bit messed up. So far it's early access. It's pretty good game so far. I would like to see them lean much more into kind of the, biopunk body horror type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see a thing where, you know, you're not just, you know, getting, tearing out like some, you know, something that perches on your shoulder is kind of secondary weapon. I'd love to see something where like, during the run, you're actively, you know, replacing various body parts and stuff like that. Similarly, right now, healing can be fairly sparse depending on the circumstances, and enemies do a lot of damage. However, at the same time, there's usually a relatively small number of enemies, and they're not very intelligent. I would personally like to see them make it so you can take more hits and heal easier, but make the enemies much more aggressive, and, you know, much more of a thing where, you know, right now, if you go very slowly, you can, you know, very quickly kind of out-level everything, that sort of thing. I would love to see a thing where if you have to do a cost-benefit analysis of, you know, do I go slow and, scour this level, knowing that my enemies are, you know, also able to, gear up.
Yeah, have it so the strategy doesn't, like, always work, or, like, even have enemies where, yeah, that's a bad strategy in some cases, but maybe not in others.
Right, exactly. There is at least some stages that are timed, and that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, overall, it's a good game. You know, it's early access, small indie studio, so it's a little janky, but, you know, I've been enjoying it.
Go ahead.
Oh, did you mention that the map was procedurally generated that you're fighting on for the on the ship?
Oh, no, I did not. Yeah. So each ship is procedurally generated, and there's several classes of ships. So I know there's like military ships, like cargo ships, and I've seen like lab or medical ships. I'm assuming there'll be more going on.
Mm-hmm. Different biomes, yeah.
Right, exactly.
What's the enemy intelligence or behavior like? Are these, you know, Doom-like, just kind of mobbing you kind of things? Like, do they have different kind of effective ranges? Like, what is encounter management like in this?
Right, so right now, they're, on the whole, not very intelligent and not super aggressive. There's kind of, you know, large enemies that take a lot to stop, and, there's, you know, small, weak dogs. Probably the most interesting and dangerous is there's some enemies that can teleport. So, like, you know, after you, you know, shoot off a couple shots at them, they'll attempt to teleport behind you.
Okay.
So there's also, like, zombies that will play dead. So very much, like, checking bodies is definitely a thing.
Okay.
I would say I think this is an area where the game really could stand to improve, but you know, there is some variety.
Okay. Cool. That was Ripout.
Yeah. So the other thing I played is I got back into Warframe for their new game mode, because you know, Warframe always needs a new game mode.
They're always going to drag you back in.
Exactly.
What's the new game mode?
This time around, it is roguelike with Souls-style combat.
Okay.
Interesting.
So, I'm not going to go too much into the justification of, like, why this is a thing. because, you know, because, you know, that's part of the mystery, and it's kind of fun. I'm also going to say, like, innately me explaining this is going to kind of spoil one of the kind of big plot twists in the game. So if you're not past the second dream mission,
if you're less than 1,000 hours in,
right? Literally, there is a mission called the second dream. So if you haven't done that yet, this is kind of spoilers, but basically, the way this works is you play most of it in your operator form. And so in that form, you know, you're not, you know, a crazy bio ninja. So, you know, you don't have double jump, you know, you don't have your ground slam, you know, those sorts of things.
You don't have your Devil May Cry abilities.
Exactly. However, what you do now have is a parry mechanic. So, you know, you now can parry an enemy's attack to open them up for a finisher. You also have a offhand pistol that there are certain attacks, mainly ranged attacks, that basically, you know, the enemy will telegraph and then you shoot them with your offhand pistol and that'll, like, knock them over. And then you can close and attack them.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place in a huge new open world area that is kind of looks like if Elden Ring really, really doubled down on floating islands.
Okay.
And each run is oriented around a different emotion. And so kind of the weather and some of how some of the enemies behave and stuff like that will be influenced by the emotion that's in play.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to explain without spoiling things, okay. But just
wait a second. Is this all an elaborate promo for Inside Out 2?
That would not be the weirdest thing that Warframe has done. So then you're going around completing various objectives, and each one you complete, you get what's called a decree, which is basically like a roguelike style, modifier or perk. And one of the interesting things there is that you can eventually unlock the ability to do just kind of a critical path Johnny version, where you're just doing the objectives you have to do to complete a run,
playing it like a story mode. Yeah,
right. However, when you're not doing that, there is absolutely nothing stopping you from just completing many multiple times more objectives than you would actually need to do, and just get ludicrously overpowered. Which can for example, you can very much, if you want to, just like max out bonuses on your gun to the point where that becomes your primary weapon and can just one-shot everything. Similarly, there's one of the perks is for every perk you take, you get your movement speed increases by 10%.
Okay.
And so, like, on a run, it wouldn't be uncommon if I'm just, trying to grind, have like 40 perks. So I'm here. Just basic walking speed is as fast as like your horse normally goes.
So breaking the game is the game in this case.
Exactly. It's also fun because you have to complete 3 specific of these objectives to complete a run, and every third one you're actually using your Warframe, so you kind of get back into the power fantasy mode. But a lot of these perks you've been unlocking also apply to that mode. And so, you can just get very crazy.
Hmm.
The cool thing with that, though, is that at the start of the run, you pick from a selection of Warframes and a selection of weapons for those Warframes. And they explicitly do not have to be ones you've unlocked. So it can kind of be a cool way to, get exposed to different weapons and things that you might want to unlock in the future. Though kind of cool is if you have unlocked them, you generally get a upgraded version of them. You get what's called the primed version. It does play into the actual base game, where they influence each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm very much I'm not good at parrying, so I am cheesing the entire thing.
Yeah.
which the game very much supports. Oh, also, again, this would spoiler. The game has the actual, the first time you go through the game, there's explicit like story mode that's kind of a tutorialized and giving you the backstory. And the way they resolve the final boss fight in that is just the dumbest, most ridiculous thing I have ever seen. So that's worth worth seeing at least once. Also, one of the events is playing Go against a small bunny rabbit, and that creature can go straight to hell because it always beats me. Like, it's 1st to 10, and it generally beats me 10-0.
Go is a very brutal game.
Yeah. Especially against a computer.
They've also added one of the events is basically a Guitar Hero style game mode.
Didn't they have a class that had that mechanic built in already?
They had a class that had a music component where you would orchestrate a song and then you got bonuses for doing various actions in rhythm to the music.
Okay.
However, it wasn't actually like a notes come down the screen thing.
Got it.
Whereas this is like notes come down the screen and then you have to chord them and stuff like that. So yeah, good stuff. Game continues to be bonkers. But
those folks do not stand still for long, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, my working theory is just they've realized that instead of making new games, they can just make whatever game they want in their current game.
Yeah, which is like weirdly a less cursed version of Fortnite.
Yeah, kinda. I was going to say that's the everything game theory.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've kept their credibility this entire time. People seem to like it.
Yep.
Nice. Cool. That all?
Yes.
Ripout and Warframe. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked about the time that a game has clicked for you. So what single moment or realization gave you the biggest jump in enjoyment or ability at a game?
Yeah.
Everything just clicked.
I'll get started here with Callum, who says, Bloodborne, at 2 points. From a gameplay perspective during the Gascoigne fight, where parrying clicked for me, and then from a theme perspective, when it got super Lovecraft after fighting Rom. Both of those make sense to me. Those are both kind of articulation points. Yeah. Let's see. Moxie, what does Peter say?
Peter said, I had that one time when I was playing Slay the Spire. I was playing as the Silent, and the very first time I was able to beat the game, it was the first time when the deck-building component just hit every note. It was fantastic.
Isn't the Silent like a later character class you play as, or like a more difficult one?
It's the second one.
Second one, okay.
Yeah, I would say people would argue that it is the weakest of all of them.
Okay.
But yeah, when I love those runs where it's like you get exactly what you need in sequence, exactly when you need it.
Those shivs
stuff. Yeah. All shivs, no time eater.
Let's see. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says Rage Racer on the PS1. It's a semi-forgotten part of the Ridge Racer series, but it's one of the best arcade style racers. I distinctly remember playing the game and finding it intensely difficult because the turning was so different than anything I had played before. Then one day it clicked. And it was like I had unlocked a new concept in my brain, drifting. Suddenly I was sideways going around corners and barely slowing down. And the AI competition was hardly worthy of the description anymore. Since then, I think I've found all racing games easier because my brain is open to the idea of changing driving style to suit the car or track I'm in.
I've never heard of this game before. In fact, when you said Rage Racer, I was like, did that autocorrect from Ridge Racer? Huh. Sounds neat. Let's see. Dennis, what does Gwen say?
Sorry, I had some water go down the wrong pipe. So.
Oh, you're right there.
I muted. I was coughing up a lung there.
I'm keeping this in.
Pause for edit.
Brutal.
Dennis doesn't know how to drink water.
Next time I'm not muting to cough, I'm just going to do it straight into the microphone. preferably while Ben is talking.
Oh, no.
Okay. Gwen says, I didn't know I could give half a shit about tactics games until XCOM 1 blew the doors open. Now it's hypothetically my favorite genre. It really helped me get in a mindset of what can I do now to help me a few turns from now. And I'm kind of better at all video games for the lessons it taught me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about a brutal way to learn. You almost have to have stuff clicked to get through XCOM.
Yeah.
Man, but I cannot.
No good.
Oh, well, I mean, kind of in terms of things clicking, like, I cannot believe, I've heard some people talking about, like, you know, playing pre-XCOM 1, games before, you know, cover and stuff like that was a thing. And I just can't imagine from a genre how you even did that.
Was XCOM really the first one that did cover mechanics?
I don't know if the first one, but I think it was the one that made it so that, like, that is just now how tactics games work.
Yeah. Wow.
Huh. I feel like Gears of War was the first one to do it, but it's a different genre.
Oh, it's specifically from a turn-based tactics kind of thing.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I was thinking like Final Fantasy Tactics didn't have a cover system, right?
No, that was more about facing and height than anything.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, this is me. Ricky says, sometime in my third Dark Souls game, I learned that dodge rolls give you invincibility frames. Before that, I thought dodging was just a slightly faster way to avoid a weapon's hitbox. I felt pretty stupid for a while, then proceeded to demolish the next few bosses with my newfound ability to actually dodge. In fairness to Ruki, the game does nothing to communicate that there are iframes there.
Yeah, which is weird because that's such a fundamental part of the game.
Yeah, that and being like animation locked, right? Or at least animation priority. And that is the thing that makes Lies of P difficult for me, is because it does not have iframes on your dodges. It is exactly like Ricky describes, is it is a faster way to get out of a hitbox.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's see, Moxie, what does Rezana say?
Rezana says, Stellaris being the 4X space sim that cracked the code to understanding Paradox's insane UI decisions. And now I'm fully in the Paradox hole.
Worst places to be.
So Paradox games, this may be weird, but like watching people stream these and stuff is like 90% of my YouTube time and stuff. And it's funny seeing people that are super into it, that's like, oh yeah, here's the list of like 30 mods I'm using, or you know before I did this I had to make sure to memorize all of the hotkeys.
Yeah, no, it's basically like a flight simulator but for civilizations. Yeah. And let's see, Ben finishes out with Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler says, I tend to be magpie-like when it comes to games. I hoard and sample a lot of them, but hardly ever finish them. So when a game grabs me, and that's the only thing I play until it's done, I usually know that's when it's special. The ones that spring to mind are Persona 4 Golden, basically the only thing I played during April of my senior year of college, after I picked up a PSTV, and it up. All three. The Case of the Golden Idol. Hey, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Much shorter of a time frame, but ripped through the entire game in one 24-hour period. Nice. And then probably Dark Souls. Never beat any of the other Soulsborne games, though, surprisingly.
Huh. Yeah, Case of the Golden Idol will click. When it clicks for you, it will click hard. as soon as you understand the particular kind of intuitive leaps you do in that, you end up seeking out stuff like it. And you're not going to find a lot of it. Yeah. Let's see. So for me, I'm just going to say this one because Dennis posted a link to a sale on this game for Roller Coaster Tycoon. But for me, Roller Coaster Tycoon was one where, like, as a kid, people were playing it to design roller coasters, whereas that didn't really do anything for me. What actually made it click was when I was going around and, you know, literally clicking on things and getting into the menus, and I saw that you could change the prices on different things. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, are we charging enough for this? Like, oh, we can make money and that'll get us more money.
Oh, you discovered capitalism.
Kind of. Yeah. Or at least I discovered the management level below just like placing and optimizing things, you know, as it goes. So yeah, that was a big one for me, just in terms of coming to like, management sims in general. Moxie, how about you?
I think for me, it's basically every FromSoft game. I inevitably play the game, like bounce off of it hard, and then several months later come back to it and you know, really enjoy it and, you know, actually make progress. I did this with Dark Souls, Dark Souls 3, and Bloodborne. And I definitely bounced off hard of Elden Ring, so I guess I need to go back and, like, see if maybe I can play it now.
Maybe. I mean, this is accepted lore, Leah, that we arrived at from Bonfireside Chat, and hearing so many people write in and talk about it, is that Souls games have an incubation period, where, like, it will lay latent. Oh, yeah, like you will reject it at first, and then, you know, like, within a month and a half, probably, you will swing back around to it, and then suddenly, like, it's all second nature to you.
Makes sense. I could see that.
Yeah. Ben?
Yeah, so my answer is Dark Souls, because it's like what you're saying, but for the better part of a decade instead of a couple months.
Yeah, there was that Christmas, okay. I got everybody... I got all of you copies of it. Yeah. Better part of a decade. So a little bit off on my month and a half.
You know, mileage may vary. I think you're probably close to the average with that.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. The one I thought of, was Wipeout HD. Specifically, I just remember the point, playing and being like, oh, I get it. A tenth of a second is a really long time.
Yeah.
I can't explain exactly what brought that into focus, but just suddenly it felt like the clock slowed down. And you know, that game probably foretold my love of Trackmania and all that stuff. But just that, you know, that fighting for the 10th, fighting for the 100th, and feeling like those tiny increments were actually very meaningful. Was a huge aha moment for me.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. So good answers all, even though a lot of them were Dark Souls, I'll allow it.
It's like you like the Duck Feed Network or something.
Maybe, possibly. It's going to skew things. So, if you want to participate in these, in the future, join the Duck Feed community group on Facebook and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this one.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things going on in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Either Dennis or Ben, since you've got kind of related stories here, who tell me what's going on with Slay the Spire.
Squee! So Slay the Spire 2 has been announced. Excite! Yeah, this is they announced that Slay the Spire 2 is coming out. It's a 2025 release, so we've still got lots of time to go.
Is that the early access or is that the full game?
That's a great question. I just remember the date 2025. I don't know if that is specifically. I assume it would be early access.
Hmm.
But yeah, we'll see. They had a very robust. Kind of tweaking and evolving period with the first one. So I imagine they'll do the same thing with the second.
This time they have cinematics.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I think we were talking about the art style earlier about how it looks kind of more at home printed on cards. And I think that lends itself as well to these cinematics where, yeah, it doesn't, you know, this stuff doesn't feel like sprites. It feels very painterly. You know, it feels like an anime, and yeah, looking very cool. The new character. So, you know, the Ironclad is there. The Silent is there. Defect and Watcher are nowhere to be seen, but there is a new character called the Necrobinder, which is, I guess, a sassy skeleton.
Okay.
Question mark?
Oh, we have a new duck feed favorite.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Not just wearing a skeleton, appears to actually be
a skeleton. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are they a skeleton wearing a skeleton, though?
Skeleton wearing a robe, carrying a scythe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, they are wearing that skeleton, though. Yeah, so you know, this is exciting. Details are sparse. There were screenshots released alongside the video trailer of, you know, presumably gameplay. And, you know, the combat screen did look very similar to what you see in the first Slay the Spire. One thing I love, though, so one screenshot it showed, you know, there was a relic that nobody recognized. It looked like a melting clock with some kind of counter on it. And then the enemy was something no one had ever seen before. It was like a green giant bird with a really long neck. And someone posted, they're like, you know, what do you guys try to make sure that your melty clock is set on when you're going into the green bird fight?
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite my favorite comment under it was, now I know how non-Spire people feel when I talk about Slay the Spire.
Yes. Yeah, that does kind of approximate it.
yep. But anyway, yes, I'm very excited. This is looking to be great. And of note, Megacrit, when Unity did their whole shitty stunt trying to change their pricing model, Megacrit swore Unity off and said, you know, we've made a ton of progress building Slay the or our next game. They didn't say Slay the Spire 2. Our next game in Unity, and we're wiping it clean. We're going to a different platform, and they did.
Hmm.
So this is, you know, confirmed along with the official announcement that it is Slay the Spire 2. They are not using Unity. They are using, do you say it Godot or is it Godot?
Godot, I think.
Godot. So, yes. Hmm. So good on them for following through. You know, anyone who has the ability to jump from Unity after they tried that rug pull, is well served to do it, I'm sure. And nothing but excitement for 2025 and Slay the Spire 2.
Nice.
It's pretty awesome too, since Godot is like open source engine. Like the fact that another major game is being released on it, that's good for the engine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll probably smooth out things with them.
They're nice. Almost big enough to start trying shitty pricing models.
Yeah, I know.
is there even a central body that would do that with Godot?
I haven't followed it closely enough, but yeah. I thought it was an open source project, so
yeah.
Not yet.
Ben, how about you?
Yeah, story I got is about a company doing a shitty thing. So I hadn't really followed this game too closely, but there's news announced for a Star Wars Outlaws game, which I guess this is lost in my mind with all these Star Wars games that are kind of down the pipeline. But this is one coming from Ubisoft, and they announced that they're doing something with their pricing model, where only on the more expensive premium versions of the game, they will have a mission featuring Jabba the Hutt. Whatever. But like the idea of like hiding content of the game behind a higher pricing is kind of hasn't really been done on this level before to this degree.
It's pretty egregious.
That's a little bit of a bummer. Like, yeah, usually it's like reserved for like cosmetic items and things like that. So that's not very cool. There's already been blowback for this, and so they've already released a statement to clarify, because I think the original backlash was like that you wouldn't even see, like, and I feel weird keeping talking about Jabba the Hutt, because it's not like I have an affinity for Jabba the Hutt, but originally, like, players were flipping out because it's like, oh, so you like won't even see him in the game, like that's bullshit, blah blah blah. But they like came out and said like, no, like you'll still, like there will still be other missions with Jabba the Hutt that's like a syndicate in the game, like, but you just won't have this like specific mission for it. But this is kind of on the backs. There's another story of like ex-Blizzard CEO saying that there should be tipping in video games.
Jesus so Christ.
All of this is kind of just like, come on, y'all. Like,
wait, yeah. Who do they think should be tips?
It's like the option to tip developers after playing a video game.
Red publishers.
Yeah.
Red the executives at the publishers. Yeah. Well, when you brought up a controversy about Star Wars Outlaws, I thought you were talking about how they intentionally made the lady not sexy enough. She's not sexy enough for me. And they're doing this to demoralize you.
Which is funny, because I looked at it, I was like, that's a sexy lady. Maybe I don't know what a sexy lady is.
All these fucking grifters rolling out like, worst game of the year. She's not a sex caricature. Fucking losers. Sorry. Yeah, that's a bummer. This is the kind of thing that used to be a retailer specific pre-order bonus.
Yeah.
But now it becomes a season pass. So
yeah.
Yuck.
Wait, I'm looking at screenshots. What, did they just want her to be like a Dragon's Crown character?
They just wanted her to have bigger titties. Yeah,
I do not like this voice. You're achieving what you're trying to.
It's literally just it's the same people on Twitter who will like they'll take a picture of like Aloy from Horizon or something, and they'll run it through an AI filter, like, hey, and just put it back out. It's like this is how she should have looked, and just like perfect white teeth, and then like weirdly huge and shiny asses and breasts. Like always, it's always so shiny. Yeah, sorry. Didn't mean to make this about internet shitheads, but
AI is just getting so confused with that being its primary purpose in life.
What do you guys think about them just raising the base price of the game? Because like, I'm okay with that. I understand inflation's a thing.
Yeah, like, no, I'm fine with it. You know, it'll make more people wait for sales, but that's the smart thing to do anyway. Inflation's a thing. $70 is fine for a new game for me. I understand why people would be upset about it, but I in particular am not.
For me, I think the price should be based on the average quality of games. And so I think the average quality of AAA games has gone down. Therefore, the price should go down. Because, you know, it balances out all the shitty AAA games you buy.
And that eventually happens with sales, though. You know, game comes out, it gets bad word of mouth, people don't buy it, so they reduce the price. You know, like, there's no reason in my mind to buy an Ubisoft game at full price. Like, wait till that shit's $30, $40, you know?
Yeah, word.
Yeah. For me, this is going to be just a thing exists that I didn't know about before, but now that I know about it, it seems like it's real cool. It is a game, called Bellwright that is coming into early access pretty soon. That
Do
is Bellwright.
Bells?
I think maybe the bell crafting will be in there somehow. It's Bell, and then Wright. You know, so like bell crafter kind of person. Right. This is not
correct bells.
Right. it's a colony builder, but it is in the vein of like a Subnautica kind of thing. So it's not like over the top, like farthest frontier, top down management sim kind of deal. Like, you are a person who is building and managing this colony, a little bit like Medieval Dynasty, but hopefully without the level of jank that was present there. And the cool thing about this that makes it more specifically, appealing to me, is the fact that, you are building this colony under the thumb of like an oppressive colonizer or like an oppressive, like local lord kind of thing. So eventually you're going to be organizing like peasant uprisings and stuff in it, which seems really cool. This is coming out into early access, on Monday, basically when people listen to this, or Tuesday, April the 23rd. I'm very curious about it. The only bummer to me is that the early access version has AI voiceovers in it. This is specifically to give some kind of voice voice presence in it before they finalize and ultimately use paid human voice actors when they get the dialogue finalized. For a small team, this makes a little bit of sense. I like that they're open with it. However, I also would be perfectly okay if it was just written dialogue. I understand why they see that as something that might dampen the appeal of it to people. But if they're going to do it, at least be honest. And they are upfront and saying our intention is to pay people to do this eventually. So,
yeah,
I'm okay with that. That feels reasonable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm super down for Colony Builder plus Uprising Management. Seems neat. Yeah. Moxie, you have anything?
Yeah. So I've got also kind of a, this is the thing that exists, which is, I found out World of Horror has merch.
It does.
Please, it's not a thing exists. It is a classic. A thing exists that I didn't know about before, but now that I know about it, it seems pretty cool.
Yes.
Story. Right. Yes. So
classic one of those.
Uh-huh.
Very much. I think there's a bunch of cool t-shirts, but I think the two highlights are they have a mug that is the city the game takes place in, and when you pour something hot into it, it switches to the city the game takes place in after like everything's gone to shit.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's one of those heat activated mugs. Yeah. All of this is on Fangamer, by the way.
Yes. And then they also have an amazing pin that's, you know, one of the characters with the cultist mask. And it's kind of hinged, so you can flip up the cultist mask, and there's no face underneath.
Mm-hmm. Just like in the game.
Nice.
What's funny about this is the person who did the visual design for a lot of this stuff, like I know her. Nina Matsumoto, Bob Mackie's wife. Bob Mackie of Retronauts got to hang out with them in Milwaukee. It's a real small role. She does great work. Yeah. Nina Matsumoto. This stuff is real cool. I've had a lot of these in my cart at various points in time. Yeah. Cause World of Horror rules.
I wish I could get some of more of these as shopping bags though.
Yes. There's only the one. Yeah.
Really good to cut apart and make back patches for jackets.
Oh, yeah. Shopping for items takes precious time. I like that. Oh, man. World of Horror is good. That's a good game. Nice. Well, that sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button the hell out of this.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate you taking the time. Going to remind you again about that streaming event that is being organized by Jala over at Fireheart, raising money for SAVE, an organization fighting for suicide prevention. That's a great cause. Follow Jala on social media would be the call to action, or there will be links in the show description for that. For those streams that are taking place between the 20th and 28th of April here. So this weekend and into next week. Otherwise, for this show, you can, join the Facebook or join the Duck Feet community group on Facebook. Sorry, I'm rusty on this. It's been a while since I've done this particular outro.
You vacationed real good.
I did. Yes. It all fell out of the back of my head. You can support us on Patreon. You can leave a rating or review. You can tell friends. And most of all, you can come back next week. Dennis, anything happening with your games?
No, just come to Origins and come see Furia Games at Origins. The booth selection process is, I think it'll have happened by the time I podcast next.
Mm-hmm.
So I will have an actual booth number to give out at that point.
Cool. That's in Columbus. When is that, May, mm-hmm. when that happens?
No, it's later. It's June, I think.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
OriginsGameFair.com is what that is. June 19th through the 23rd. Yeah. Anything else I'm forgetting?
Don't think so.
All right. Well, I've been Cole Ross. This has been The Level. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
This has been The Level. I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
This has been The Level. I'm Moxie. Who knows what I am on other shows?
And I'm Ben Merkel, and this has been The Level.
And God, every time I deviate from it, everybody just shaking my fist
like
at you.
Lemmings.
Yeah. No, you're just such a good leader.
I guess. I don't know.
Brings me so much joy.
Oh, and stick around for some titles. All right. I didn't write any down. I apologize.
Yeah, I got you covered.
Okay.
I had three. The first one is Neg Your Kids. Second is That Bunny Can Go Straight to Hell.
Okay.
Oh, I guess I had four. I had A Flight Simulator, but for Civilizations. But
I had that as well.
I'm going to say A Flight Simulator for Civilizations.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that works. And then the acronym ATETIDKABBNTIKAIISPC.
Hey, Dennis, I'm going to need you to if you have that typed somewhere, copy paste that.
Yeah, I will copy paste.
I got as far as ATE and you kept going.
It's the, you said it's a classic, a thing exists that I didn't know about before, but now that I know about it, it seems pretty cool story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, one of those. Okay.
So I will paste that.
I mean, the part of me that is a Chaos Goblin kind of likes that one.
I, Jesus. All right. Let's see. Moxie, you have any?
I just have a flight simulator for Civilizations.
Ben?
I just have This Has Been The Level.
Okay. Oh, no. That'll make people think it's the last one.
Oh, no.
All right. By laughs, it seems to be Neg Your Kids. By votes, it's a flight simulator for Civilizations. Does anybody have a strong opinion? I'm leading toward Neg Your Kids.
So we're axing the acronym.
I don't know. Sorry.
Neg Your Kids is fine by me.
Okay. I guess it is. It is decided.
Make sure we have Dennis saying "Neg Your Kids is fine by me" on tape.
No, it's there. It's there. No. The recordings exist. Oh, it is decided.